Hey, Emily, I see you. What, you brought some breakfast there, huh?
Oh, look at that, Dad! Emily brought you some Krispy Kreme for your fatness!
Oh.
Sure cure to make you thin. Krispy Kremes!
No, no, Rashi.
Yeah!
No,
hey, watch this, Dad.
I'm on the diet. I'm on a diet.
What's this? An eclair. A chocolate frosted eclair. Oh, doesn't that look good? Oh, what's this one? Oh, maple glaze, Dad.
Oh,
look, it's their lemon summer special,
I can't,
Dad.
You eat it, Rashi.
Oh, you're not going to have it, Dad.
I can't,
oh,
Rashi.
Oh, well, that's too bad. Here, Hobart, go ahead and have a donut.
Oh,
look at that. He just mouthed it and laid it on the floor. What a perfectly good waste of delicious food. I bet you would like to pick that up and have an eat.
I can't, Rashi. I won't.
I know.
I won't.
I know. I love to taunt you.
Hi. Welcome back to another episode of Almost Live with Paul and Misty here at Radio Rashi. I guess that's our official title, isn't it?
Radio Rashi, where floor donut is still viable donut.
God, yes. And you are the lovely...
Paul Dini.
Oh, and I am the lovely Misty Lee.
Yeah, we've been on this Freshology diet thing. It's not really a diet. They just feed you because we're children. And when we are left to our own devices, we run off and eat McDonald's and Starbucks. And
course.
That is not conducive to a healthy lifestyle.
So do they mail it to you? Because I find that
they drop it off at the door.
Yeah,
did
yeah,
you see the bags on the way in?
Yeah. No. I find that's common for a lot of diet plans. Like Jenny Craig, they mail you food.
Oh, Jenny Craig, we had to go get it.
We had to go get it and check in and get scolded. And
yeah,
everything.
And get embarrassed. They
our,
shame
our
you.
Our attendant was really good.
Max was on. You met
Max.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah,
Max
he was
really
on
good.
Here a couple times. But he was super duper nice. But the problem with Jenny Craig... is we are children, and you have to get your own salad, and you have to get your own green beans, and you know what? We're children. We cannot be trusted to go to the grocery store and
no,
get vegetables. We can't be trusted to do that. And so we had to hire a service where they cook our food, like we're children, and cook our vegetables, because we're children, and drop it off at the door, like little kids in lunchboxes, because we're children.
So we eat strained peas every day.
No, we do not.
They cook it and then bring it over. So you don't even have to cook it. So it's
we
dropped off,
heat it
it's
up.
Ready.
It's, yeah.
But here's where...
Because we're children.
Here's where we fell down.
I'm dumb.
Now, here's where we fell down on the Jenny. And I think this is important, and I've heard
cook.
From other people.
Are you
who,
still...
What? Here's where we fell down on the Jenny Craig, and with programs like that is... The Jenny Craig, you know, they give you your food. They give you your entree every meal. And it's up to you to go out and get salad and greens and stuff to flesh out the
right,
out
I just
the
said
meal.
That.
Yeah, which is great if you're into that. But, you know, what would happen with us is we would just pop an entree in the oven, in the microwave.
For convenience
that,
sake.
And then it's like,
then
do we want to steam vegetables? Who wants to make broccoli or cauliflower or anything like that? And then we would eat the entree, be hungry, and then it's like, we'd be out late at night. It's like, you want to stop at McDonald's? Yeah, if we just get a little burger.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally. And so
no,
it would be very easy to deviate from that plan because we have no discipline.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, I think, they say the first step for an addict is recognizing you have a problem.
Yeah.
And for us, it's not that we were addicted to food or anything like that. We had a problem. We have no discipline.
Yeah.
And actually what we're doing is we know that we're going to be on this for, and this is, it's called Freshology, and it's expensive. It's like $50 a day per person.
Ugh. Wow.
But it's fresh food.
Yeah.
It's not frozen.
Yeah.
It's super low sodium. We're almost completely off dairy now, which
well,
is amazing
yeah.
for your voice.
And the,
it's
and
really
the other,
good for you to get
the
off dairy.
The other thing is, you know, that it gives you your vegetables cooked almost like a little TV dinner, like an old-style TV dinner. So that even if you don't like cauliflower or broccoli, you find yourself picking
you
at it.
You can choke it
that,
down, yeah.
And that and that's we're eating the salad, and that's what fills you up, and that's what gives you the vitamins.
Right.
And also...
And it's steamed. It's not like wet, soggy, nasty cauliflower. You know, I mean, it's really... A chef took the time to make this morning.
Now, I make good vegetables.
You make excellent vegetables, but they're almost always covered in balsamic.
Yeah, that's the only way to choke
And they're delicious,
them down.
Don't get
but,
me wrong.
Yeah, but
you know,
you put
but,
on a little balsamic.
Yeah, I cover mine in cheese.
Yeah,
well, that does
yeah,
no
that
good.
Doesn't work that way. So it's really interesting. And in 2 weeks, you've lost 10 pounds, and
wow.
I've lost 8.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So it's working,
wow.
You know? And we
yeah.
both got a ways to go to be where we want to be, you know, not to where other people are like, you shouldn't lose any more weight. You know, it's just to where we want to be healthy and comfortable.
Yeah.
But it's huge, consistent progress because I've eliminated Starbucks completely. which was not nearly as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And we haven't, neither one of us has deviated from this program because it's all encompassing.
Well, Starbucks is like a trap, you know, people fall into because, and I've read about this because for whatever reason, when I was younger, I kind of missed that period where people become coffee addicts. I mean, mm-hmm. I like coffee mm-hmm. and I like drinking it occasionally, but I mean, I've at one point, I was working with a writer on something, and she, I'm not going to say who, but she would come over early in the mornings, and I'd open the door, and she would come in, and she'd go, coffee, where is it? And I'd go, I don't make coffee, I don't drink it, and it would be like, she would turn into the She-Hulk.
Vader, no!
Vader, you know, and then suddenly the She-Hulk is standing there, and then suddenly... You know, she's like pulling me out, we're going to get coffee. And then we go over to a coffee shop and then she has coffee and then you know, we wouldn't get any
writing. She's a functional human being.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Now, is this the person later. Who I'm guessing it is? Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and, that wasn't who I thought it was going to be. He just mouthed her name to me. That's interesting. That's funny.
Yeah, I don't want to say who.
So it was coffee. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
And, you guys wouldn't know who she was.
And anyway, so what happened was, I missed that period where, you know, most writers I know have to drink gallons of the stuff, you know, to stay.
Yeah, well, but a lot of writers also have a mound of cigarettes or an empty bottle of bourbon on their desk as well, and you don't have those things either.
No, but I've got a pile of hamburgers like junk.
You never did that.
No, but
we're like that.
I'm
and you know,
snacker.
That's another thing. You're a snacker and a grazer. But more than that, one of the things that I've been on him about, and we're going to make a doctor's appointment, and who cares about this crap? Why are we talking about this? I'm going to finish, I guess, so that we can just be off the topic. But was food allergies. Because my friend Renee Geerlings, who was on the podcast that we never posted, actually told me that if you're eating food and you're not aware, but you have slight food allergies, and most of us do, you tend to crave foods that actually you're allergic to because they give you an adrenaline rush. And when you're eating food for an adrenaline rush, it's not like an addiction. It's like a, it's just a really unhealthy dependency and craving. Mm-hmm. And what happens is your body sucks in, you know, it puts out all that adrenaline, which stops your metabolism because it thinks it's in emergency mode. And so everything goes right to your fat cells and you don't even have a chance to metabolize or use that stuff. And I don't know the science. I haven't researched this. This is just what someone told me. So if the science is wrong, I'm sorry. But it made perfect sense to me.
Really?
So we're going to actually go.
Yeah, that sounds familiar because my mother does a lot of food allergy stuff in her work. And I think she told me something similar.
So I told him, I said, we should just go get tested and see if, you know, because I know for sure I'm super lactose intolerant. Like I can't have milk, which made Starbucks even worse. Because I drink Starbucks in the morning because I loved it. And after a while, you don't even love it anymore. And it's just like, I was driving around in the neighborhood a couple weeks ago and I thought, oh, I gotta go get my Starbucks. And I thought, gotta? You gotta go get that? You don't gotta go get coffee ever. That's a
coffee
treat.
Does not rule me.
You don't gotta get that. You do not go home. Right. And it was hard to go home. But since we've been on this program, my skin isn't gray anymore. I noticed that I was turning gray and I was aging really fast and I was like, damn, what's happening to me? And I said, Paul Dini, there was this picture of Dorian Gray, but it was me.
What?
And it was like, oh no, you know? And I was just like, oh, I hate it. But I've noticed that being off Starbucks, because unfortunately that was most of my quote unquote nutrition, I wouldn't eat.
Yeah, you would.
And I would just have a
drink.
You would
run out of the house without any breakfast. And then you'd have a Starbucks that had a lot of milk in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a 1-2 punch, you know, like you're getting the calories, but it's also, you know, those drinks are just packed, you know, with calories. And
well,
also,
I never drank anything that was super heavy.
Well,
calories.
It wasn't like you're drinking mainline frappuccinos.
I didn't even have lattes usually. I mean, it was like an iced coffee there was
five shots of
espresso. But still, it would have the.
Yeah, well, there is that. I did get that. When I got a vanilla latte, it had five shots. And if you get a, what do they call it? A quint?
Yeah.
I guess. And I would walk up there and say, oh, may I please have a vanilla latte with five shots? And they would go, seriously? And when the barista says, seriously? You got a friggin' problem.
Yeah.
It's time. It's time to let it go.
Because they drink all day long.
Oh, man. And they don't have any problem with putting a quad together, you know? And it was really interesting. And the other thing is when they introduced the Trenta, I just said, you know, that's the exact same size as a human stomach. That's gross. Actually, I think Tyler said that to me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's a really good point. Yeah. I don't need a drink that's the same size as my stomach. I don't need it. I don't want it. But I haven't missed it because this food is so, because the plan is so comprehensive, It's veggies and a protein. And I mean, literally, the other day we had filet mignon and tomatoes.
Nice.
For dinner.
Yeah. Well, I gotta admit.
And then they give you dessert.
The price doesn't seem to faze me at all. Just to not have to shop, not have to look for the combination of meal, exactly how you're preparing it.
Totally. Because we really are very busy. And it's fabulous.
Well, we ran the numbers, and you know, like a lot of times, like we'll be running around in the morning doing an errand or something, and it's like, let's go to the coffee shop for breakfast. So that's $30 or $40 right there. And then
keep track of it all during the week, all the different expenses you have.
You know,
for
there
food.
Were times when we had, you know, like when Calla was here and London was down for the little girl from up the street and my niece and stuff. We were spending up to $15 a day on Starbucks. Really? Really? Yeah. You might as well just light it on fire.
What is that sort of money? Oh, that explains why we had to sell a car. Okay.
Oh, stop. We didn't have to sell a car. You're ridiculous. But it was fascinating when we ran how much money was actually being spent on fast food. And for as expensive as this program sounds, it's less than we were spending before.
Yeah. I'm not taking responsibility.
For
this.
For anything?
It's Starbucks.
I'll tell you what else taking responsibility for. Should we bring that up? I don't think we should.
No, but it's the 21st century, and in 21st century America, nobody takes responsibility for their actions anymore. So it's clearly Starbucks was to blame.
No.
Not us.
No, it was totally us, because we are children. But like I said...
You're taking responsibility for your actions.
I am.
What do
and
you
I'm
mean
changing
thing?
My life because I don't want to be...
That is un-American of you.
Do you want to be president?
Yes, I will adopt that dog with the wheels on it.
Yes, you could probably... Oh, that was the thing. It's like, yeah. There was a dog... Oh, somebody adopt this dog. There's a dog who needs to be adopted. He is a former Marine Corps dog used in Iraq, and now he's disabled, and he's going to be put down on the 24th, so somebody needs to adopt him.
Oh.
So I sent a tweet to Barack Obama saying, hey, president, if you want to get elected next year, adopt this dog.
Yeah.
I know you got the fancy, schwancy, rare breed dog that's rarer than Rashi's thylacine, but, you know, adopt this dog. Give him a home in the White House. Do something nice and man up, you know, or at least find him a home. I mean, you know, somebody, I think a presidential candidate, if they adopted that dog and made a deal out of it and also was nice to the dog, that would get them elected.
You know, I want to bring something up. I think that's a very good point. And also, I want to ask you guys how you feel about this because, and this is a much smaller scale, but the idea that you were tweeting the president.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And the fact that we have access to both celebrities and leadership figures and things like that is fascinating via technology and how small. I was talking to an actor yesterday about someone's body of work and how this woman said, oh, well, I worked a lot in England. And he said, no, you friggin' didn't, because we have the internet now. And I looked you up. You didn't work anywhere you said you did. You liar. Mm. And it's a much smaller world, and you better be able to put up what you say, you know, walk your talk, if you will.
You can't have those Canadian girlfriends.
What?
You know, back in high school, no, I got a girlfriend, she's in Canada. No, you never had that?
You were a nerd.
What do you mean, were?
Oh, Emily, did you hear Emily? Emily said, what do you mean, were?
His
face is so red. Oh, it's Ezra's friend. It wasn't Ezra.
Yeah.
Ezra never had a Canadian
girlfriend.
You knew a guy.
Knew a guy.
Oh, awful. Anyways, I hope it wasn't too hard when she fake broke up with you. And if it was hard, I hope you got some mileage out of it with the real girls that went to your school.
Exactly. Yeah, some real girl sympathy.
But nonetheless, you can't say those things because
not anymore because people can check up on you.
Yeah,
they can totally check up on you. Boom, boom. There you are.
Everything is online,
which is cool because I love it that people can't bullshit anymore. Although it's a skill that we all took, you know, joy in. I actually have a treatise on, you know, that some psychologist wrote defining bullshit. It's an academic paper that this dude wrote. It's called On Bullshit.
Oh,
that's awesome.
It's a little tiny book. And
I think I've seen that. Yeah.
Sylvia, Dr. Von Kluge, gave it to me.
Dr. Von Kluge gave it to us.
Of course she did.
But I know...
What I wanted to ask you was, how do you feel about being... Because you're accessible as well to a lot of people, both through this podcast. And the reason I bring it up is because on a much smaller scale...
Yes.
And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. Yesterday, our hairstylist texted me...
Yes.
...to make an appointment. And I thought, I love this because I don't have to deal with a receptionist, and I think receptionists are important, and I don't think the position should be eliminated because it's important to greet people when they walk into your company. But I love our dogs are so dirty. Anyways, I loved look at my hands, it's all black from petting Muggsy.
Well, okay, all right.
Disgusting. All right. Anyway, I loved that I didn't have to deal with a phone tag session, that I got back to her when I could. She was right on it. And I said, hey, do you have anything at 5 tomorrow? And she said, as a matter of fact, someone just canceled just now. I'll put you in. Nice. Can you confirm? And I just thought, boom, 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 boom. That is so awesome. That is such good service. And I thought it's so personalized. And how wonderful would it be if, as a result of your tweet, the president did adopt that dog?
Well, what I'm hoping is somebody, you know, like retweets it and, you know, and it gets to him. Because when you send something to President Barack Obama, it probably goes to a room somewhere and there's a intern who has to decipher things and stuff like that. Or more important,
you don't think he's checking his cell phone all day?
No, he's on vacation.
Of course he is. Yeah.
You know, my only source of information is the Drudge Report.
Oh, come on! Are you serious?
And they showed him
boo.
On Martha's Vineyard, on his way to a clam bake, riding a bike with a basket full of lobsters, and he was eating an ice cream cone. And I believe he had a T-shirt on that said "Fuck the jobless."
And all right.
No, it didn't. It didn't have any of those things.
That was classy.
Should I take that out?
No.
Okay.
You should leave it.
Because but it's just I am ashamed because I like our president an awful lot, but I'm just giving you kind of the Drudge. Every time Obama eats something,
because you get your news off the Drudge Report.
I also read BBC World News because I have to find.
You know, you just admitted that your main source of news was the Drudge Report.
Well, that ain't
when you
cool
read
news
with a slant and a bias, you have to expect news with a slant and a bias. You know where I get my news? The frickin' Onion. That's where I get.
Well, there you go.
Exactly. That's incredible.
Right, the information coming.
They're
in
more unbiased than Fox.
Okay, the information coming into this house is based on The Onion, Ain't It Cool News, and The Drudge Report.
Yes.
Boy, are we screwed
up. We're a sinking ship.
And rumors on Twitter.
We are on the HMS Sinky Town.
You know
what
you talked about communicating with celebrities and everything
via
Twitter?
Dinosaur Comics reference.
There was a, I actually got a retweet today from Dennis Leary from, and I went to school with Dennis Leary, and I haven't seen him in 30 years, but, and I actually, you know, sent him an email back, or retweeted what he sent, whatever it was. I'm not really good at it, but it was basically his tweet was, there's going to be memorials and tributes in New York on the anniversary of 9/11. And you know who's not invited? The firefighters.
What?
The firefighters are not invited.
How?
And
what?
Dennis said they weren't invited that day in 2001. They just showed up.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is absolutely, that is shameful.
That's heinous. Mm-hmm.
If you don't invite the firefighters, if you don't take... Not only the survivors.
Who's hosting the memorials?
I don't know. I mean, it's 140 letters.
Yeah, and who's invited if it's not the firefighters? Like,
that's a pretty gross oversight.
What is this? Is this like another celebrity thing for us to watch celebrities get together? I thought it was a terrible tragedy. Oh, take my picture. Take my picture.
Yeah, like we really need to see Alec Baldwin there.
I know, right?
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that it's like, you don't need to see celebrities giving tributes. If anything, you need to put a big table out. Fill it with whatever food and drink the firefighters want, and everybody in the town toasts them, and the cops too, and the medical workers and the paramedics, and just the regular people who just showed up to give of their time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and
New Yorkers should be invited.
Well, you know, there's that story. Kevin Conroy told me that he's a working actor in New York. Kevin Conroy, of course, plays Batman on Batman the Animated Series and other things for Warner Brothers, and being a native New Yorker, when he heard about 9/11, he went down there just to help people out, and he was serving soup to people and to the workers, and he said, here you go, and the guy said, you're Batman, because he recognized his voice. So how cool is that,
that Batman was at the was serving
there
the workers.
It was, baby.
That's very appropriate, because Batman would totally do that.
And then he's being a
I
good
love
citizen.
Soup kitchens and stuff.
Worked in one for
I loved
for a long
it
time, yeah.
I missed it. I miss it. Actually, one of the guys that I used to work with just friended me on Facebook and was like, oh, we haven't seen you in 7 years, I hope you're well. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway,
we're talking about cool stuff.
Well, I mean, there's only 140 characters you can use on Twitter, so I don't know the full length of what Dennis was talking about. So there was not a link to a story. But if that's true, then that is absolutely heartless and shameful. I mean,
it's a gross oversight, and hopefully it will be corrected.
You had guys giving their lives, so at the very least, you invite the survivors, and you invite, for the people who lost their lives, you invite their families, and, not celebrate, but to be honored,
You're right.
But to honor
to
their
pay
memory
homage.
And everything. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't turn it into a celebrity thing. Ugh, I'm really down on celebrities.
Well, no, you're not. It's just one of those things, like when you raise money for something like that, the damage is done. What are you raising money for?
Yeah.
For the surviving families, and quite frequently it's like, well, we're raising money for 9/11. well, right, but what do you mean? Because where's it going? And they usually don't specify. Like, I felt about like that for years. Who the hell gets all the money from Comic-Con? I want to know where that goes. Well,
that being said, you know, who gets the money for the breast cancer awareness stuff? Right. Who gets money for prostate?
Right. And so before we donate to a cause, I always research where it goes. Like, I know exactly. For nonprofit
organizations.
I know exactly where Boston Buddies money goes. And we send them quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, not certainly not as much as we pay on food. Yeah. But, you know, but I mean, we send them a chunk. Like, whenever I see that they're having a drive, we send some cash over. And I quite frequently will put up a little begging thing like, hey, guys, why don't you give Boston Buddies some money? Because I know they're on the up and up. Mm. I know they're always running at a deficit. And I know that there are women that make, like, $50,000 a year who are paying a sizable chunk of their income to keep dogs from dying.
Yeah.
That's very noble. And I know who they are. I know what they're doing. And I know exactly where that money goes. And it's a totally worthwhile investment. But when you have something as huge and nebulous as, you know, like, well, we're raising money for Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Haiti could be somebody's aunt. You know? Yeah. It's just like, where is this going? What are you going to do with it? That's why I like Kiva. You know, we talked about that a million times. You know exactly where that money's going. They've been pre-screened. You know what they're going to do with it if they haven't already done it.
Uh-huh.
And you know where your cash is going.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of good charities out there. And then I think there are a lot of really nebulous ones. And it reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza, one Christmas, he's giving out, you know, these cards saying a donation in your name has been made to the Human League or the Human Fund or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And there is no such thing.
Right.
Mm. It's just like he had come up with this name as a way of getting out of giving people Christmas gifts is he came up with a fake organization. And then, of course, people are so moved, they're starting giving him money for the organization. But I think that's how a lot of con men and grifters,
Of course it is. My dad used to make jokes when we were little, you know, like, and he was like, oh, how are you going to pay for that school trip to New York? You better get a can and go door to door and say you're raising money for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Meaning us.
Yeah.
Because I need to go to New York. I'm raising money for my New York trip. And people will give it to you. Because people are, I choose to believe, you know, reading John Locke's stuff, the state of nature, a state of war, a state of peace, you know, all that philosophical shit. Yeah. I believe that people are basically good.
Yeah.
I really do. And maybe it's because my alignment is neutral good, if you will. But, you know, I mean, If somebody really believes that you're really working hard and they can help, they usually will.
Yeah.
Yeah. That all being said, all these things to donate to are good. Please donate and give worthwhile, but do your research. Make sure it's going to the right areas and
make sure it's going, where you want it to go.
Yeah, exactly. Going where you want it to go.
Because it's your money.
That being said, I have worked for places who have well intentions of raising money for certain causes and do walkathons and stuff, but most of that money ends up going to paying for that event.
It totally does. I will, however, say that the March of Dimes, whom I was the president of their youth group for a while when I was a kid, and my cousin is a pretty big fundraiser over there. They manage the March of Dimes chapter in Michigan, in Southeast Michigan that I worked with, managed that money awful well. And I don't mean that as an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. I meant, you know, like they really did a great job with that money, and everything was donated for every event that they did. So it didn't, and the money went right to the scientists.
Right
to exactly where they were going. And they did use most volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And my cousin's been there for, gosh, 30 years maybe she's been working there. And her salary is very modest and she's happy with that because she knows she's making a difference. And she knows, and she's one of the best paid people over there and it continues to be modest. What are you doing with those donuts, Emily? Oh, you got
to
leave.
Yeah, she has to run to work.
Mm. Off to Cartoon Network with Emily. She's got her Cartoon Network hat on.
Say goodbye, Emily.
You look like you work there.
Green hair?
No, the Cartoon Network stuff. You look like somebody, like an artist that works at Cartoon
Network. The Cartoon Network security badge is also a kind of
that's a kind of a giveaway, isn't it?
Yeah. A little bit of giveaway.
Is that why they try and hit me when I walk across the street?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Those are Nickelodeon people, though.
Great.
Okay, see you later.
Bye, Emily. You didn't get to say goodbye.
Bye.
Tell him to renew tower prep.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. The bottom line on charities, if you do your research and it looks like a good thing, you know, give to them. Yeah. If the guys hitting up for money are a fox and a cat dressed in, you know, old vaudeville type clothes.
Yeah, probably shouldn't.
You know, leading a little puppet down the street. Probably not a good.
However, investment. You might want to follow them because they're probably going somewhere fun.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Kick an ass out of you. Yeah.
Well, there are plenty of guys who give their money to guys like that who wind up being made asses out of.
That is true. That is true.
There you go.
You know, I do want to get back, though, because we've been working on this neighborhood watch thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason that I bring this up is because I was starting to kind of touch on this, and I guess I just got off point,
yeah,
as I am wont to do. But the idea of community, because people have been complaining a lot about how the internet and recent technology advances have made us a very insular, self-centered, narcissistic society. I would like to argue that, and here's why. First of all, I love that Kara can just send me a text message, our hair girl,
sure,
and send me a text message and say, you know, do you want this time? Mm. I love that. But also, we've been putting together a contact list for Neighborhood Watch because we had kind of a cute little neighborhood. It's really nice, Leave It to Beaver, pretty, kind of, you know, suburban little neighborhood. But there have been heroin deals going on up the street, and cars are being stolen in broad daylight. What the hell?
Yeah.
And so the neighbors got mad. We got mad. And the guy up the street used to be the mayor of our city.
Oh,
so he called the police force and said, get over here and explain yourselves. What the hell's going on? Mm-hmm. And he put together an entire neighborhood watch meeting, and we started doing this. They had another one, and we couldn't attend, and they elected me friggin' block captain. Thanks, asshole.
Congratulations.
You weren't there. They're like, well, who doesn't want to do it?
Clap for that.
Oh, Misty's not here to say she won't do it.
That's exactly what they did. And I went over there, like, at the end of the meeting, they were like, oh, you weren't here, so you're the block captain.
I volunteered you.
What the heck? But it's a privilege, and they're really nice people, but this is what I wanted to bring up. In the past 2 days, we have decided that the neighborhood's going to have a defibrillator on our street, and the nurse up the street has agreed to house it, and the nurse up the street has agreed to be on call. So if one of the old people or us on our street has an emergency, she can get here faster than 911. How awesome is that?
That's amazing.
And she has agreed to get in her car no matter what time of day or night and get over there and operate that defib because she's going to keep it at home and she's going to keep it charged.
Well,
that's awesome. She's putting together a CPR course for our neighborhood. We're establishing we're getting hard hats and having emergency earthquake
training.
We're having emergency earthquake training. And the police are so aware of our neighborhood now that they come. They send representatives to our neighborhood watch meeting, and they feel responsible to us to answer to us what's going on, what the progress has been, what arrests have been made. And since that first meeting, they really turned up the heat, and they've arrested the two people that were making the heroin deals, and they're gone.
Very good.
Well, and that's awesome.
And so what I wanted to argue, I'm almost done.
And that's from people making, you know, caring about their
people caring about the community, but also
we
are able to have an email group and a WordPress website where they can see where, you know, like it's a blog entry. They can access it any time of day or night.
They can leave
and it's instant access to these people. And so I disagree that technology makes people less interested. I think people are just a little more fearful to reach out, but the demand or the want is definitely still there.
Well,
it's really
exciting.
I can also
see how, like, just going to your neighbor and asking what's going on a day-to-day basis can be, you know, bothersome
daunting.
Or troubling.
I don't want
to
go over
there. Yeah, and just as easy as looking up online to seeing what's happening.
Well, it's like having a neighborhood bulletin board. I mean, if this was
a
small town, like I know some small towns in rural places do have neighborhood bulletin boards at the general store or something like that, or at the church or the community center where you can find out what's going on. And in this situation, in this neighborhood here, I'd say pretty much everybody goes to a house of worship of some sort or another.
Maybe.
You know,
I
think most of the families do, but
I think
the
it's
church
the same majority,
but the church has become, you know, what's different is like in a small town, most people go to the same two or three churches.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a sense of community through the church or synagogue or wherever people go. Here it's a little more split up, but it's good to have that old community bulletin board on the web where everybody can check in and everybody, you know, it really brings people together. It all depends on you know, if you've got a disconnect, if you're just dealing with games or getting celebrity news. You know, if you're taking it in as entertainment, one person, or if you're sharing something with other people, there are like families who also have, you know, family, blogs and things like that, so they can communicate with each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's super cool because, you know, I put a call out and I said, hey, it looks like a defib or an AED is going to cost about $1,100. You guys still want this? And everybody wrote back, yes, we still want this. Yeah. And we already have. Overnight, I got $250 in pledges from neighbors.
Wow.
So, and yeah. I mean, you know, we're one-fifth there.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. And it's so cool to live. Now, not every neighborhood is like this. I'm sure.
No, of course
if
not.
You lived on a row of apartment complexes with, you know, self-centered folks that weren't willing, you know, weren't as interested in their community or as willing to give,
yeah.
you might have a different response.
Yeah, I live in an apartment complex across from a police station. I know it would be tough to even get them together.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's worth a shot because it was so fascinating to see, boom, how right there everybody was and how everybody truly cares.
Sure.
And it's really inspiring.
Yep. That's nice. That's yeah. good to hear.
What was it that you wanted to bring up? Oh, you had some sour grapes complaint that I don't think you should.
Oh, I don't think so. Whatever it has.
Especially not now.
Whatever I have was not relevant to.
relevant to anything.
I'm up and down. I'm a Leo, so if I'm not roaring at somebody,
roaring happily, he's roaring mad.
I want somebody roaring at me. You know, usually something.
Or
you
roaring
know,
about you.
Roaring about me. That's right. Yeah. So.
Hey, there was something cool though that I do want to mention.
What's
there
that?
Was an online interview that got quite a few. Like a journal video that guy made, and he listed his 11 favorite.
Oh yeah, the
Batman
guy with the glasses.
Episodes.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh.
of all time, 7 of which were yours, Paul Dini.
Very well, they nice. Were all mine in the larger sense of the word that I produced them all.
Gross. 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 Yes. Okay.
But no, I mean,
you're on the New York Times bestseller list for graphic books.
Oh
week.
Yeah, number one.
Wow.
Number one.
Right.
Wow.
Shout
Streets
outs
of Gotham,
to
volume
that's
Dustin
amazing.
And Derek. And you can't see it there, but we're sitting there with Dustin Wynn's very nice new
Dustin
Batman
nice.
Black and white sculpture that just
buy it.
He just sent me as a birthday present.
It was sculpted by Joseph Mena.
Yes.
Yeah.
Designed by Dustin.
And it looks great. It's
I
it's
love
like
Dustin.
Black and whites are great.
Dustin is the nicest man. Can
yeah.
I just tell you, he is so talented and
really?
He's so nice. I'm sure Joseph Mena is a great guy too. I just don't think I met him. Oh, maybe that's him calling right now. I bet that's Justin
We're
Bieber.
Taking calls.
Did yes. you see that? Did you see that video online with that little girl who's crying because she loves Justin Bieber? And then the phone rings and she just does this amazing turn. She goes, I bet that's Justin Bieber. Like he would just call her in the
yes,
middle because she's
the
crying.
Optimism.
I mean, and that leads back to exactly what I was talking about, the accessibility on the internet. Mm-hmm. She feels so close to him. Because he's on YouTube and because he's that he would call her at home. Of course he would.
People have always crushed on celebrities, you know, like girls felt that closeness with the Beatles. And
David Cassidy.
Like. Oh, just
David
like Cassidy. This There's podcast even. Man. I'm sure people listen to this who feels like they know us pretty well and can
yeah.
go out and have a beer with us or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah, and then they'll
dumpster.
Come up to us at Comic-Con. They know all the intimate details yeah. of our personal life. And it's like,
they do.
Wow.
Oh,
they ask
that
about
was,
Rashy.
That was definitely
like that.
Weird being recognized at Comic-Con. Somebody going, you're Ezra, right? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What was I on about? Oh, I don't
Dustin.
Know.
Dustin.
Yeah, Dustin. Dustin is great. And,
Dustin is awesome.
And so I can put that on the same shelf next to my Bruce Timm, Batman Black and White.
Nice.
Because, and then I think the only one I need is the Alex Ross Batman Black and White.
Do you not have it? Is it out already?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I love
they
Alex.
They must have done that.
I love him so much.
Yeah.
He's so great. I love talking to him on the phone.
Another dog person.
Oh, huge dog person. He's got rescue boys too, yeah?
I think so.
I think they do rescue him. They had two, and I know he just lost one recently.
Yeah.
But he is just, he and his wife are just the nicest, genuine, most nice, sincere people. They're just super cool. Super
That's
cool.
Good.
And they're
he's
doing
an
interesting
asshole.
Things all the time. He's not an asshole.
No, he's not. He's
you sound like me talking
him.
About my friends. I was talking
he's
about
great.
Renee last night.
No,
we
he's,
had
he's
a,
wonderful. Sorry.
I met somebody that knew Renee last night, and he goes, how do you know Renee Geerlings? I said, oh, Renee Geerlings is a dick. And he goes, what? I said, she's just an ass. And he was like, I think she's really nice.
That's the old comedian's way of showing affection for somebody.
It totally
oh, yeah.
is. What
it's
a racist.
Like, it's like, I remember going to Nate and Al's years ago and listening to a bunch of comedians talk, and as
yeah.
soon as they brought up the name of like a comic that one of them, you know, that
really
was
loved.
Held in high esteem, mm-hmm. it's like, he's an asshole!
Totally.
Son of a bitch! You tell that son of a bitch from me, I hope he drops dead! You know,
I hear that a lot from artists in the industry going, oh, so-and-so just drew this awesome page. Oh, they're such a dick. They draw so well. I hate them so much.
Yeah. But you put them together and there's
yeah.
this genuine affinity.
Oh, yeah.
I love Renee.
Yeah.
I love her so. She is an asshole, though, I will say. But in the best way.
And actually, you know,
awesome.
What's very Hollywood is the flip of that because, mm-hmm. like, you'll hear some, like, you'll bring up a name and then somebody will go, I love them. They, I love him so much. He's a wonderful person. Oh God, my best friend in the world. I love them. I love them dearly. And then the thought balloon over their head says, he's an asshole. And they mean it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the answer to that is, tell them I said hi and said nice things about them.
Yeah.
Ew. Ew. You know exactly what they're trying to say. It's like.
But I also maintain that you know, in Hollywood, where it exists on that veneer of sociability,
totally,
that nobody really likes or dislikes anybody.
And no, you can't, because you end up working with them again. Yeah. And besides, like I said, people are basically good. They're nice people. And sometimes people make mistakes. Sometimes they forget themselves in business deals and act like assholes. But they're usually not.
When
you break through that in the business side aside, they're just people.
I've been in a room
usually just looking out for themselves.
I've been in a room with people who have, like, you know, like when a deal has gone bad on something, like they've gotten up and they just like scream in my face, and I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna, you know.
And he didn't get you, did
kill
he?
Your grandmother and every all this all this stuff. And you're dead to me. You'll never work in this town. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm sitting there like Bugs Bunny, just like listening to the coyote rant and going like, you know, the Chuck Jones blasé expression on my face. It's like, look, dude, you don't hate me. You don't hate me, but you don't really like me either. You know, and we don't even. It's just like you're sad that the business deal went down. And this is a creative endeavor. And there are a lot of creative people, and a lot of egos involved, and a lot of temperament. And a lot of times, artistic people don't deal with it in the same way. But really, you're more angry at the situation than you are at me. So I'm not going to get stressed over this. I'm just going to leave. And probably in a week, we're probably just going to pick up the project again and finish
exactly
it.
What happens.
And that's exactly what happens. Yeah.
Exactly what happens. It was just, I had this magician I was working with once, and there was another magician who used to pride himself in knowing celebrities. And he was very, you know, they were both very nice guys, but the one didn't really think a lot of the other one's work. And I said, hey, I've been talking to this guy. Do you know him? And the first magician said, yes, tell him I said hi and said nice things about him. And I said, Magician B is interested in directing and producing my show. Is this something I should pursue? And Magician A said, no effing way, but tell him I said hi and said nice things about him. And I said, I see. And I knew everything I needed to know. That was code. And I was being allowed into code, you know. And it was interesting, you know. And it's, but they did work together, those guys. They got along famously. Uh-huh. You know, but it was a magician A was looking out for my well-being because he had seen a, you know, like a history of behavior.
You know, life's too short to get, you know, to really pursue vendettas and things like that. And I know disappointment and, you know, it's like,
sorry,
that's okay.
And, you know, people have written to me and they say, if Tower Prep doesn't come back, I'll just die. Life will end for me. And it's like, No, it won't. Like, you know, it's a disappointment, but, you know, food is still going to taste good. There's still going to be someone cute in school who makes your heart dance. You're still, the sun's going to come up tomorrow, or else it's going to rain and look really pretty.
Yeah.
And, you know, by this time next year, there's something on TV that you're going to like just as much
You'll
fall
in love with that as well.
As you like Tower Prep. Sure. You know, whether or not it just plays forever in reruns or we come back in new episodes, I still don't know. But, just take a breath, which is something I'll try and follow, tell myself to follow, because I don't do it all that often.
Hey!
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, I think I might.
Oh, my God, you guys. I can't tell you what he did
I'm a drama queen. I'm our drama queen.
Oh, my God. Anyway, he was on and on and on about this one project, and it ended up working out totally in his favor, and he was a pain in my ass all week long.
Sorry.
You were a girl. All week. But I'm glad it's over.
Yeah.
And thank you for hearing me. And thank you for starting to make an effort to take your own advice.
Yes.
It's a move in the positive direction. And it will allow you to wake up tomorrow morning. Ezra, did you have something to say?
I want to change the topic conversation so much. But I did want to ask you near the end of this, that how'd your magic thing go last week? You weren't in and we...
It went great.
I loved
working with Jonathan. I worked with Jonathan Pendragon at the Magic Castle last week, you guys. And we did a show that we've put together called Metaphysics, which explores the difference between a hyper-rational mind and the mystical. And they're both those approaches to magic. And Jonathan does very calculated, very mathematical, not all mathematical, but, you know, quite frequently very calculated things. And he plays a character called Order.
Mm-hmm.
And I play Chaos. And so, for example, in one of the illusions that we perform, we do the Sands of Egypt illusion together, which is where you put three sands in water, mm-hmm. and he hands the sands to me one at a time in orderly fashion, which I promptly dump all into a bowl of water and mix up. And then he extracts them one at a time, dry. And it's really amazing. And it's not, you know, a lot of people go, ooh, is that space sand? Interestingly enough, space sand doesn't work. So you've got to use magic.
Yeah.
Because if stuff. Space sand just makes a big mess. You can't grab it. And once you mix it up, it's all just mixed up.
There's no cheating in
you
this.
You know, so, I mean, he actually, we put red, blue, and green in this show. We change the colors up sometimes. But in this show, we did red, blue, and green. And he pulls them out, a handful of red, handful of green, handful of blue. And it's really good magic. So, but he's a delight to work with. And it was very well received by the magic community. And we're grateful. You know, and we're looking at doing maybe a small run in NoHo with that.
Yeah,
honing and refining it a little bit. And this is the second time we've performed the show. And we made it smarter this time through.
But it was standing room only.
It has been both times we performed there. It was SRO.
Yeah.
What an honor. Wow. You know, yeah, it was really neat.
And also, you know, he comes out and he's a little bit more verbose and effusive and emotional as order, and you're more reserved as chaos, and you come out and you're in the black outfit.
It's funny, because I'm all corseted up and tightly laced and completely, you know, just rigid almost.
Playing against types.
Even my hair is super rigid, except it sort of explodes up at the top.
Yeah.
And it was something that I didn't even realize we had done that.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where, and then after we realized, it's like, okay, how do we amp this up just a little bit? Because I'm covered head to toe, you know, and he actually comes out more like the, almost the zany artistic type, and I'm super organized and super staid. And it's a nice contrast. And he and I work so well together because we're just like brother and sister. And we just poke and prod and punch each other the whole show because it's how we are in real life.
You've got a very nice chemistry on stage.
Yeah, you definitely
together.
Play well together.
Yeah, we do. We play very well together.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most magicians are intimidated by him because he's so famous and because he's so talented. And his knowledge and breadth of magic is so wide and deep and vast. And I just don't care. I certainly respect and admire his work.
Of course.
But if he's acting like an asshole, I tell him that he's acting like an asshole. And he doesn't because he's a tremendous human being and a gentleman and a scholar. But, we should have him on here.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
we had him in West on. I think that'd be really good. It'd be good talk.
Yeah.
You know, I think people would be really interested.
Oh, definitely.
He's got some great stories. West has some great stories. We have great stories together.
Uh-huh. I know a lot of people are fascinated by the magic stuff. In fact, Lobster Johnson here, Justin here, I mean.
Hi, Justin.
He has a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Not made to prompt the music. Misty, what sort of preparations do you go through before taking the stage?
It depends on the nature of the show. If it's an illusion show, you have to set everything, you know, in any magic show, you have to do the preset and stuff. I'm always rehearsing in my head before I go on to do a number.
A lot of getting into character type stuff? Like
I don't do any getting into character type stuff because usually I'm playing me.
Mm.
And if I'm playing Princess Magic, she's also me.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
So it's like as soon as that curtain blows open and it's, hey there, kitties! You know, it's like it's very easy. You know, so I run very much like a dancer runs through, or in musical theater, you sit backstage and you run through every step and you go, okay, I'm ready to do this. And you step out.
You have a great way of just psyching yourself to go up on stage because...
I do? What do I do?
I don't know. You do that...
Slaps yourself and...
No.
Go!
Slap Jonathan
it's that magic that you have that I don't have for performing, because every time I've asked to come out and speak someplace or give a talk or even act, you know, I get terrified. I get bad stage fright. I don't think you have that, do you?
I don't. Well, I do if I'm not prepared.
Okay.
Like if I feel under-rehearsed, I get really nervous. But if I feel like, I mean, I think you perform like you practice.
Yes.
Mm.
And if you've run the show start to finish in costume, there's no reason for it to not go as practiced. Or if it doesn't go as practiced, chances are you have rehearsed solutions to the problems that have arisen in rehearsal, so you feel prepared and at ease. And that may be part of the problem, because if you're asked, and improv helped a hell of a lot.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, you know, if you drop something, you go on.
Yeah,
you know, quite free. I mean, I've seen magicians drop birds out of their coats on the stage, and the bird is just sitting there on the stage like,
it's just dead.
It's not dead. It's just sitting there, and it's like, hey, what's up, everybody?
Yeah.
And the magician has to go on. What do you do? Stop and go, oh, and pick up the bird?
Yeah.
You can.
You got to cover.
But that's a different character.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If you rehearse, then you come with an out. I call them outs.
Yeah.
You have an out for that. You know, whereas, you know, if something goes wrong, if, you know, if Jonathan had dropped a bottle of sand or if for whatever reason he wasn't able to extract that, yeah, we'd handle it. And there were things that did go wrong in the show, especially like the first two shows, not because of lack of rehearsal, but because of nerves. You just go on and you're fine because you practiced enough and you know where you're going. So it's, I think that the only time I ever get nervous or testy, because sometimes I get mean on show days and I'm like, I'm just trying to get this together, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And that's my nerves until I'm prepared. And then I go, okay, I'm all ready. I'll see you later.
And then you do a terrific job on stage. And then even if there are some little gonks that I might notice that nobody else does, you know, simply because I know the way, the flow of your...
It's just the nature of live theater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not saying it's acceptable, you know, because ideally you want to rehearse all those kinks and gonks
But then
out.
You come back and go, well, that stank. That and it's like, no, it was great. It was great because nobody else noticed and, you know.
Well, I have very high standards of excellence as far as that stuff is concerned. I'm never happy.
I just hate public speaking. I hate getting up on
a
podium.
But you're so charming. Why do you hate it?
Well, it depends on what I'm saying. If I have to come up and say a few things... But a couple of years ago, I had to give a keynote speech at Comic-Con, and they asked me to be the keynote speaker, and I didn't even know what to say, and I didn't write anything, so it was really kind of like,
you sit down, happy
to be here at Comic-Con.
That's why you were nervous, because you didn't write anything, you didn't know what the hell
but
you
I wrestled with it for a long time, and I didn't have any way of going with it. So if I'm writing about a certain thing, if people ask me to write about, you know, speak on the subject of Boston Terriers. That gives me something.
Well, that's what I've been telling you for years. It's like creative endeavors are much easier when they're focused. For example, if someone said, I want you to do an entire 30-minute magic show based on this fork, I could do that. But if someone says, I want you to do your dream show, anything you want for 30 minutes, where the hell do you begin?
Yeah.
You've got to have a starting place somewhere. And so I've got to look around the house and go, this crystal ball, we're going to base it on this crystal ball. And it might morph and change 50 times.
But at least it gets you rolling. Yeah.
You know, so it's huge. And that's the same looking at a blank page as opposed to looking at an outline.
Yeah.
What a huge difference to go from nothing to script or from nothing to outline. Outline to script is much easier,
isn't
it?
That being said, he comes in every week and does a podcast where he talks about whatever comes to his mind anyway.
Totally.
So it's not like he can't do it. It's just the presence of people and the expectations.
And his perception.
Yes, but I need to know what I'm doing up front. Yeah. I got some idea. Like I was in one of Kevin Smith's movies and he said, and I wasn't written into the script or anything, and he just said, okay, your name is Frank and you sit behind the counter and you are... You're renting videotape, and you know Liv Tyler's character so well, you don't even really talk to her. And actually, you're just sitting there unspooling a tape, and you're trying to roll it up, and when somebody asks you something, you just get confused, you know. So it's just like, it was background action, and I could have just, you know,
improvised
that. But he said, no, have some fun. Take the tape out, and like you're trying to fix a broken tape, and when somebody wants to rent something, you have to put that aside and talk to them, and just work out some stuff. So we worked out some stuff. So that was what I did in that one little scene. Even though you know I barely register in the background, it's sort of like, okay, I'm not like a dope sitting there looking at the camera. I have a little activity to do.
Which would have been awesome.
I'm working this job late at night. I'm working this job late at night with a girl who will not look at me, and I'm just doing this thing. But
you know who that guy is, and you know what your objective is. And what you're saying is it's much easier with a clear objective.
Yes.
For a keynote speech, for example, if you had sat down beforehand and said, what do I want these people to feel? What do I want them to think of me? What do I want them to think about when I'm done speaking?
Yes.
If you had answered those three questions, you would have had a much easier time speaking to them, because even if you had written a loose outline, you wouldn't have been as nervous. That's all I'm saying. It's a little bit of preparation. And ideally, a lot of preparation gets rid of those nerves. So to answer Justin's question, I don't get ready right before getting on stage, but it's sometimes days or weeks or months of preparation to feel ready to take the stage. You know, because I'm usually pretty pleasant backstage and pretty organized. I don't get like crazy.
No, you were.
Although I had some maroon in my audience on Friday. He was awful.
Wow.
It's the worst audience I've never had. And he wasn't a heckler or anything. He was just super visible. Because the room that we played in at the castle, and I'm going to make this brief because I got to go. I actually have a lunch meeting today.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's totally okay. You guys can keep talking, you know, because this is really interesting. But this guy just made himself very visible. As an audience member, you have a job. You know, and a lot of people, by entering a show, they don't realize this, but you're agreeing to an unspoken contract, which is A, to suspend your disbelief and play pretend with the person on stage, and B, to behave yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just behave yourself. That's all we care about. You know, I've never really seen anybody fall asleep in the show or anything like that, but this guy, everyone in the audience knew his name. And people, you know, at the Magic Castle, it's a wonderful, prestigious place to perform, but the audiences are not always wonderful and prestigious. I've been very lucky. And this is the closest thing I've ever had to a quote-unquote run-in. But this guy made a name for himself, and everyone knew his name. And I don't even think I should say it. I doubt he'll listen to this, okay. But anyways.
So he had some standing.
Yes.
Okay.
Dude was misbehaving, mm-hmm. and he was non-compliant when Jonathan invited him up on stage. Now, Jonathan is a pro and can handle that no problem. So they got through it. And he, you know, made the kid look good, because mm-hmm. that's your job as a performer, is to respect your audience and make them look good, and sent the kid back to his seat. When I came out, a lot of what I do requires the audience in this show to suspend their disbelief, because it's based on the mystical, which means a lot of it is like quote-unquote psychic stuff or mind reading or mentalism. And I get when you have a strong character, it can be kind of hard to take. I get it, which is why Princess Magic exists, because I can't take it either, okay? But this kid literally said, "Oh my God, with this psychic bullshit." And I could hear him from the stage.
Oh.
And I was reading yeah. the energy of the audience members. I had my hand up in a very, you know, graceful way and was running my hand back and forth reading the audience energy. And this went well every show except this one. And we had done a lot of shows at the castle because you do 3 shows a night.
Yeah.
So I heard this and I saw who said it. And I just let my hand run over to him. And I just pushed my hand out toward him, turned it over, and just brought my hand in like I was swallowing his yeah. freaking soul.
Yeah.
And no one in the audience knew what was going on but him and his girlfriend.
That's the way to go.
And we continued on like, "I'm watching you, you mofo." Like, that's exactly what I was saying from the stage. Because if we lose control, we're sunk. Yeah. Especially yeah. when you're doing like quote-unquote serious magic. You lose control, you're done. If the if you give the audience, you know, not because you know, they have to be controlled, but you want to maintain, you want to be respected. And if you lose respect, ship is sunk. So yeah. anyway, his girlfriend, you know, so, and he sat up very rigid and straight, because when I make that scary face, I mean business and yeah. I'm screwing around. And Paul will tell you, it's not pleasant. You don't want to be on the receiving end of that. And I mean, I don't mean like, oh, but
yeah.
it's like, he had okay, my attention this and is... he was surprised.
Yeah.
Over, yeah. yeah. He had my full attention for a second there, and I wasn't going to embarrass him,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but I did let him know, "I'm aware of you." And he sat right up and behaved. A moment later, I made eye contact with his girlfriend, who made a hideous face and rolled her eyes at me like, "You're," you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I smiled, and I was about to distribute the calculators for our last trick so that the audience can check Jonathan's work. And I walked right up to her and said, "And I'd like you to have this calculator." And I did that for 2 reasons. The first reason being establishing control again. You have to maintain that audience control
yeah.
because she was behaving like a coward from her seat, kind of telling me off and giving me grief on stage, which is mm-hmm. a disrespectful audience member. If you don't yeah. like the show, leave. Yeah. You are not yeah. stuck
and,
there.
And she's challenging you knowing full well that you can't come and do something about it.
Knowing.
Yeah, you can't absolutely. Break character and mm-hmm. do that.
Oh, yeah. So instead, what I did was went right to her, addressed the problem like a grown-up, and handed her a calculator as a good gesture, a gesture of goodwill. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I've got 2 choices here. She's either going to sit up and behave or reject the calculator and I can have her ejected from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And she chose to sit up and behave, and I was very grateful. But it was really an interesting experience as a performer. Yeah. And one of the magicians in the audience picked up on it and said, "You've got tremendous audience control." I said, "Got to in a yeah. show like this. If it's Princess Magic, I don't care if they're yelling about their wieners. Yeah. I'll handle it."
Yeah, exactly.
But in a show like this.
You
can handle
it any way you want then.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Out of respect for what Jonathan was about to do, because mm-hmm. what he was about to do is like the closest thing I've ever seen to a miracle.
Yeah.
And it is brilliant.
It takes a lot of concentration, and you absolutely. Can't be distracted by little stuff.
And if you've got hecklers and people who are saying, "I know the trick is done."
You know, they weren't, it was certainly not like that. They were just disrespectful.
Yeah.
And we had, I mean, two little pseudo bad apples, you know, yeah. like not even really bad apples. They weren't bad people. I think they were just inebriated, because mm-hmm. that does happen, because you can drink at the castle.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of happens sometimes. And that's, you know, it's allowed. And I don't know what they were going through that day. They might have been fighting. He might have been blowing off steam. He might have got fired. You mm-hmm. never have any idea. So you always want to be respectful. But it was really fascinating, you know, like how poorly they behaved in my perception. You know, I was just kind of like, wow, because the show's pretty tight.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what's going on here? There was something going on. And I told the guy who books the castle what happened. And I said, and the reason I handled it like that was because if they were to call and complain and say, "Well, the girl magician was really mean to me." And they said, "Well, what did she say?" "Well, she said, I want you to have this calculator."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no. How dare she?
Well, exactly, yeah, I mean, but because, yeah, what, there's no ammunition she has. It's just,
oh, no, you, I had just to disarm petty. Her. You yeah, I had to disarm completely. Her. And so, you know, but it could have been much worse. Why did I even tell that story? Because that sounds so
it's about,
negative.
You know, exerting control. But, you know, I once heard from a magician, like, one of the ways to get control early on, and I don't know if you refute this or not, whenever he brought somebody up, the first thing he says, what's your name? You know, and it's like, Carl. Okay, Carl. How you doing, Carl? Now stand here. Like he.
Oh, I think that's unctuous.
No, well, the work for this magician is he kept repeating the guy's name, which, you know, made it sound like he was always calling him and asking for his attention. So his attention was always on him, and it put him on the same level, them on kind of an equal level, but also established the magician as just a head and shoulders, just a little bit above him, an inch or two above him, and more in control by the use of his name.
See, that's interesting, because what I actually do is start giving them instructions or physically moving them on stage.
Well, that
instead of using their name, because their name is usually used to establish rapport, and you hate it when people use your name over and over in a conversation.
It.
So I would not recommend that, actually, and I don't do that. Right. I get it once. A lot of times magicians will do that, so they get it right, and they keep it right, and they, you know, so they don't screw it up, because the worst thing is, and I actually do this as Princess Magic, I'll be like, what's your name? Jimmy. Okay, Frederick, come on over and stand over here. I do it all the time.
But you call everybody Jimmy.
I call everybody Jimmy and Frederick, even the girls. But it's if you forget their name, the audience goes, oh, come on. I know his name is Michael. What the hell's wrong with you? You know, like they think you're an idiot. But to use it over and over, I find that very gross and unctuous. But if it works for that magician, good for him. Mm-hmm. But I actually do give them instructions very usually when I'm doing that, or invite them to share in the experience, you know, ask them questions and really, you know, but lead the conversation and actions gently.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I have a totally different take on that. As Misty Lee, as Princess Magic, I'm like, yeah, just come on up over here. Yeah, stand over there on the trap door, whatever, you know.
But
like
still,
all
the last thing you want is somebody
joke.
Who gets on stage and suddenly thinks they're Robin Williams and they're going to control the show.
You know, that happens. I've had that happen as Princess Magic, and I don't mind it.
Well, yeah.
Because the bottom line is, you know, I've never had it happen as Misty Lee ever, because my energy on stage as Misty Lee is a little more gentle.
Yeah.
And I think being a female, that has something to do with it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just lucky. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have strong stage presence. I don't know. But,
who to call up. You know, if it's a guy waving his glass going, hey, call me, I want to be on stage. You know,
think so
it's like, no, I'm going to take that shy girl over
there.
Yeah,
come on up here, take your pants off first, though.
Yeah.
I would totally do that to that guy.
But as Misty Lee, you would call up the shy girl saying, don't call me, come on up.
No, I wouldn't. Not necessarily. It depends on the nature of the illusion and what I want the audience to experience. Like for the linking finger rings, and that is something that Jonathan and I do together, I would probably call up a female because we're harnessing that mystical energy, you know, to do what we have to do. And I talk about that. And there's a reason for that. And it's a beautiful moment. And it's easier to share. And it's easier for audiences to make that leap to that beautiful moment and to trust. Because they have to trust her because she's telling the truth. And I want them to know that. A girl. Whereas for something like Jonathan's Keller rope tie, he's going to call up two big burly men. The louder, the better.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, and backstage, most magicians do this. And very few of them will admit to it. Well, the good ones probably will. But we watch you.
Yes.
You don't think we're looking at you,
scope,
but we're totally looking at you.
And
the castle actually has little holes where we can spy on you.
It's like, oh, use that guy, use that guy. Drunky McGee over there, stay away.
And you can see the way they treat. You can see people that are exuberant and happy to be there, and they're very outgoing. You can also see people that are sort of shy and bummed out. You can see all that behavior beforehand, and we can psychologically profile you like that. So we know who to pick and who not to pick, because you go, oh shit, that guy's gonna be a problem. And he may be sitting super quiet and very well behaved in your show, but he's a wild card and you don't want him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We got to wrap this up. I talked the whole time, guys.
Good. I talked all last week.
Okay.
It was just
bounced
me and the thylacine talking last week. Yeah. Are there any more questions?
No, that was it.
That was it? That's fine.
Oh, how nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin.
Yeah.
Lobster Justin.
Yep.
Yeah. Lobster Justin and I have been going back and forth because he's interested in picking up magic. So I'm going to tell all of you guys at home really quick. One of the books that I highly recommend for somebody who is interested in picking it up as a hobby, not necessarily as a pro, although, excuse me, I keep hiccuping here. There's plenty of information in it to be a pro, and it's very well laid out. For a professional magician, I recommend volumes 1 through 8 of the Tarbell course, but that's an investment.
Wow, yeah.
Frankly, it can be very difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
However, for under $30, depending on whether you go hardcover or paperback, and you can usually find a used copy, on Amazon, Mark Wilson's Course in Magic.
It's true.
Complete Course
Mark
in
Wilson,
Magic
nice.
Is one of the best books. It is comprehensive. It covers everything from card and coin magic to rope magic to business card magic to stage illusion.
Wow.
And it will really give you an excellent overview. And if you want an overview of great theory, I recommend Nathaniel Schiffman's, I think it's called Abracadabra, mm-hmm. I think. But Nathaniel Schiffman is the author, and it's excellent. And it's peppered with tricks, you know, but that's more of a history of magic. And Jim Steinmeier's Hiding the Elephant.
That's really good.
Excellent historical documentation.
But Mark Wilson's book is really like the primer. It's a beginner's
Bible. Basic course
Bible
in magic. Yeah, absolutely. Magic. And when I teach magic lessons, I make the kids, but well, I used to. I don't really teach anymore, so I'm just too busy. But I used to make the people I was teaching buy that book and say, nice. Go through this and tell me what you're interested in. What kind of magic do you like? No matter what they like, they can find it there.
And Tarbell is a big investment because you're buying almost like a whole
library. It's a couple $100, yeah.
For all of them. And some of those books are kind of hard to find. We do have them all, though.
Yep, I have them all, yeah.
And, but that's when you're ready to move on, that's the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, but if you've mastered everything in Mark Wilson's book, you're a better magician than me. You know, I mean, it's good Lord.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information in there. And, you know, ideally, you want to look at that stuff. Like when you're learning magic, it teaches you basic things about sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then it teaches you how to build on those things like math to do more advanced stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I know is built from the Blackstone magic video that I had and I watched over and over as a kid.
Never seen it.
That was a fun video, but... It was just mainly for kids.
Yeah, that's cool, though.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what he did.
Well, you kind of have to, you know, get into the stuff and read it and see what works for you because, you know, I've read the Mark Wilson book also, you know, but it's mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't really perform, but you kind of find where you're going to go if you want to take up any aspect of that. And it's like, okay, I know the basics and I know a few tricks and things like that, but I'm more interested in big illusion and puppetry and things like that.
Yeah, but in order for that stuff to come off right, in order to be an illusionist at Jonathan Pendragon's level, you have to understand magic at its basic, which is the sleight of hand stuff.
Yeah.
Because although it doesn't look like it, he is using sleight of hand in those illusions.
Mm.
Because he's using the theories behind it and the understanding of misdirection and the psychology of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, it's not as easy as it looks.
No,
it's
but
like, well, you can just buy this big box because daddy can afford it. Mm, you can
practice.
Get some sexy dancers. You can, but you're not going to connect with the audience. Jonathan has had years of training
and
you
practice,
know, as
practice too.
Absolutely, because you perform like you practice.
And then you know that's the thing with ventriloquism and with puppets is you're also using misdirection because you want the audience to look. Your attention is on the puppet, and you have to maintain eye contact with the puppet.
It's acting.
You have to make it. You know, there's nothing more real to you in that moment than talking to this, you know,
acting.
Glove on your hand.
Totally.
And, yeah.
In the moment acting, it's so imperative that you're a good actor to be a performer because part of the hallmark of an excellent actor is the ability to share what they're experiencing in a visible way and make you feel something.
Yeah.
You know? Like I was just talking and I have 6 minutes to get across town.
Okay.
But bringing up Baby, for example, how much I hated that character because she's a psychopath and a criminal. But the dialogue is punchy. But the reason I hate that character so much is Katharine Hepburn did such a beautiful job playing this character that I actually invested enough in her to not like her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That means something.
Yeah. If you hate somebody in a movie or something and
you
hate them
first.
Enough, it's because they're so well developed and so perfectly portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Usually you hate villains, but in this case you hate the heroine because
she's not
just...
a heroine. She's like heroin.
She's a nut.
She is. Horrible. She's narcissistic, and she is the chameleon. You know, they break down the characteristics of a psychopath. We learned this at CIA training into the acronym chameleon, and narcissistic is the N in chameleon, and she just leaves a trail of devastation behind her based on her awful narcissistic spontaneous moments of just utter instant gratification and indulgence. It's disgusting, and she ruins Cary Grant's life.
to the end, last scene where she destroys the
his
dinosaur.
Life's work.
The dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And then...
Spoiler.
And then, oh, spoiler alert. Yeah, the dinosaur gets wrecked at the end.
If you haven't seen this 50-year-old movie.
Yeah. 50, it's like 100 years old.
Man, wasted my Netflix
queue. It's almost
queue.
As old as the dinosaur.
Yeah. But, back then it was a live mount. It was...
funny.
But, you know what? We didn't make it to the end of the movie. I've seen it all the way through.
I can't with her.
I don't know.
I can't with
if there
her.
Is
and
a moment
with his
where
spinelessness. I can't with
remember.
It.
I remember. I enjoyed the movie for what it was. I remember I enjoyed it because it's about a zoologist. But I remember. and there was a leopard in it. But I. So it's more like I'm looking at the animals than anything. I could have watched a Disney True Life Adventure. But the thing is that I don't know if there is a moment toward the end where you warm up to where you feel like
I don't care.
So
I can't. I asked someone how it ended, and when they told me she ruined the dinosaur, I said, I cannot watch the rest of this movie. It's just going to piss me off.
Well,
she's so disrespectful, discourteous, and manipulative through that whole thing. I hate.
Oh my god! I gotta watch this right now.
There are only two reasons that you
I
have.
Can't a, with her.
There are only two reasons you have a dinosaur skeleton in a movie. One, and this is modern day, it comes to life and kills people.
Yes.
Which does not happen in this. Or two, it gets wrecked for a funny thing, which is what happened in this. Also, the leopard does not kill anybody in this movie.
Which is a shame. It could have killed her.
And wouldn't it have been funny if it ate her and then it talked in that same way?
Yes.
Ready at what?
Ready at what?
I'm going to do it. Destroy the dinosaur now.
That's older Catherine Hepburn.
Because I'm just a plague and I'm going to.
And isn't it marvelous, Tom?
Isn't it marvelous?
All right, bye everybody. Thanks for everything. I'm so late.
Yes. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll wrap this up. Goodbye. No, we should do a better wrap up than that.
Yeah.
But no, we shouldn't. Okay, I'm out of here too. It's lunchtime. Bye.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.